This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Very well. Life is good, and looking forward to the regular season kicking off 1 week from today with the Thursday night already. Snuck up on us a little bit.
It did. Very, very excited about it, and hopefully this is going to be the kind of season that we expect out of the Ravens, but we've only got now what? We got 13 days to wait for the very first game, right?
No, the very first game's a week from today.
Very first game is a week from today. We're recording this on a Thursday, by the way, for release on Friday. So we'll just be careful about this.
Philly and Dallas, I believe, right? Philly and Dallas.
All right. First one. All right. So big news from Ravensland today is the signing of Kyle Hamilton, one of a series of very significant players coming to their re-up on their deal. Kyle Hamilton, one of the ones that I don't know about you, but I was completely confident that they would find a way to get this deal done.
Yes, they weren't going to let a player of that caliber walk out of the building. The Ravens have never done that ever. They've never allowed one of their really cornerstone marquee players to leave. And Hamilton was at the top of the list as far as most wanted or most important, not necessarily the one that was most immediate from a time constraint perspective. Mm-hmm. But Kyle Hamilton has been everything and more the Ravens could ask him to be, exemplary in every way, and continue to solidify the backbone, the spine of the defense for years to come.
Yeah, it would be the highest paid safety in the game, but it'll also be a Raven through the 2030 season. So he's already signed for his fifth year for $3 million, so just on his rookie deal still. And then he had the fifth year option for 2026, and this extension will cover years 2027 through 2030. So that is very comforting to have the extra year. It also means that with kind of normal growth in the cap, this should become a fairly high value contract as time moves forward.
Yes, I would imagine so. So he will only be 29 or 30 years old when this contract expires. So he'll still be on the right side of the age curve there. Otherwise, I mean, he did get a significant raise from the previously highest paid safeties. Kirby Joseph and Antoine Winfield are both earning just a little bit over $21 million per year. And Kyle's obviously at 25. I did think it was going to be certainly he deserves to be paid the highest. Could they have tried to shave $1 million or two per year as far as, in exchange for the security of the early extension? Potentially, but this seems to be well in line with what marquee players are being paid, even though safety is a little bit of a depressed position.
Yeah, I would agree. And this, maybe they can even look at the rest of the division, the rest of the conference, and say there's going to be some safeties who will have to get paid more now based on Hamilton's contract. The AAV is about 9% of cap, 9% of the 2025 cap. So that'll be inflated away by the time he actually gets his first year of that contract in place and be smaller, but he's essentially getting a 2-year deferral on the start of that contract, if you want to think of it that way. He's not a free agent right now signing for the 2025 season. He's signing for the 2027 season, if you want to think of it that way. So
the overlap or the lack of overlap with Roquan's contract should be noted there. Roquan will likely be off the books by the time Hamilton is earning, those big cap charges in the $20 to $30 million range.
Well, that is important. And hopefully they have a inexpensive alternative then for Roquan. If you're going to pay a safety, you probably better not pay an inside linebacker. It might have to be one or the other. And of course the Ravens paid both for many years and it was well worth it, but, both of their jerseys are right behind your head there.
Yes, they are. They sure are.
Okay. Well, anyway, neither of us is unhappy about the Hamilton value, but there are a number of downstream implications. Because obviously there's less of a pool of money for the current key extensions after 2025. I thought we'd go after that. There's a first tier and a second tier now kind of developing. But the first tier, likely and or Andrews. I'll say it that way. Mm-hmm. It might well be or Andrews. They have Linderbaum. There's a declination by EDC of a desire to talk about the current extensions in play for Lamar Jackson and Linderbaum. He says he likes to work in the dark. Yep. I think that's probably good. Certainly from an organizational perspective. Do you have any fear that they might be past a point where they can make a deal for Linderbaum or make a deal for Travis Jones, maybe, or Owe?
I think Owe and Linderbaum are on the close to the end of the line as far as letting them test the market, because they both have, sort of reached their plateau or reached their ceiling. And I think Travis Jones maybe just sort of betting on himself in a way after he saw Madubuike do the same, where he's hoping to put it all together, so to speak, and produce better counting stats and then take that to the bargaining table to, have a little bit more leverage in negotiations. I thought seeing the Linderbaum, they did not pick up the fifth-year option. At some point, you have to pick and choose where you're going to spend. You can't spend everywhere, and center may not be the best place to spend when it's so costly an expenditure because of the way they lump the offensive linemen together for a lot of different distinctions.
Right. I'm with you on that. And there are going to be some hard choices to be made. He did allude to that. EDC did allude to the notion that they're not going to be able to keep everybody. So, that's the first tier is kind of those five guys and what are the chances to retain them. Give me the over under. Okay. Well, let's go for a percentage by player that you think each will be kept. I'm going to type mine in here and then I'll be ready to go in a second here.
Okay.
Okay. No, I probably, okay. I'm going to do that. Okay. Go ahead and start us off with Isaiah Likely. What's your chance on him being,
I'll go to 60% for Isaiah Likely. I think he's a priority. I think he took a step last year to maybe become tight end ones with Mark Andrews. He's a younger player. He's also going to enter the season injured, which may have an impact on his stats, which will maybe give the Ravens a little more bargaining power. So I'll go 60% on Isaiah Likely.
Okay, I'm at 55%. I think it got lowered a little bit by the injury. But, as we were going through, what's the percentage chance of players being claimed if cut on the last episode? There's no need. We can Delphi, but there's no need for me to Delphi that number. Right, we're both good. Sure. Mark Andrews.
So Mark Andrews, I'll go to 40%. It's certainly an either or proposition there. So 60-40. He is declining a little bit. He has had some troubles in the playoffs, which may be due to some side effects of his diabetes as far as having numbness in his extremities. So I heard that as a potential theory, because he just really, I don't think he's ever caught a postseason touchdown. All the regular season touchdowns he's caught, and he hasn't had one postseason touchdown. And he has had some drops getting older, but he is an exemplary Raven, a role model type that the Ravens like to reward with a third contract if they can. They can't pay two tight ends. There's no way with the other money they're putting towards other positions. But I don't think it's impossible. If Likely gets a $18 million offer that the Ravens don't want to match, maybe they come back to Mark Andrews with $12 million a year or something.
Like I think that's, you're in the right range, maybe that Likely, I think, would be lower than that because they have a fifth-year option on Likely still that they can exercise. Or sorry,
franchise tag.
Yeah, that they can exercise on him, but it's cheap. And if they go into, I think it would be one minus the percentage on Likely would be the cap on it. I actually think it's a little lower than that. I think Andrews, I would put it at about 40%. And my fear is with Andrews, not so much that he doesn't really want to sign with the Ravens. I think he wants to stay here more than anything. Yeah. But the fear would be that they offer Likely something, and Likely and he talk about it, and they offer Likely $15 million a year, and he says no to it. I think I could do better in the open market. And then they come back to Andrews, and they offer him 11. And Andrews says, what the hell? And then they can't come to an agreement. My market value is higher than that. I'll go elsewhere. So I'm saying 40 on Andrews, but I do think Andrews might be the kind of player who take a little bit less money to stay in a very, very good situation here in Baltimore.
Yeah, for sure. He's Lamar Jackson's go-to guy. He has been since that San Diego game, or like, were they still in San Diego back then? I think so. Anyway,
yeah, they were the LA Chargers playing in that crappy soccer stadium. We went out there to see that game. That's a, by the way, if you ever get a chance to see a football game at like an oddball venue like that, go ahead and go, because you'll remember it. Like London games are worth it for that. And I think if you got to get to go to one of his outdoor hockey games, it's probably worth it too. Mm-hmm. All right, Tyler Linderbaum. This is a very hard one to peg for me. I went for the minimum possible error and said 50%.
50. Okay, so I'm lower than – I'm at 30% on Linderbaum.
Okay.
I think the fact that they didn't pick up the fifth year, and there's been kind of a, you know, a little, not contentious, but standoffish responses when the media asks Tyler about the contract. I think that probably says something. It's just – I think it's just going to cost too much. You can't pay a center the same that you pay a tackle. It doesn't – and he's not such an elite center that he is positively impacting – you know, the whole rest of the line necessarily, just because some of the physical limitations, and he's never going to be able to overcome that. So I know the Ravens like his, you know, he had his character. He certainly fits the mold of a character player that the Ravens would like to pay. But I think it's going to be tough unless he really does want to take a haircut to stay here.
Okay. I think it's going to get lower once the season starts. A lot of the, you know, good portion of the 50% success rate will happen over the course of this next, you know, 10 days or so before the season starts. Mm-hmm. So if it doesn't happen during that time, I think there's it goes down. But I think I would say this, that the worst thing that could happen to Linderbaum is for Corey Bullock to get a 4-game trial because Linderbaum gets hurt this year. So Linderbaum, while he doesn't really have too much injury risk. I mean, he's got injury risk like any player does, of having a serious injury that you know, ends his career or something goes wrong. And the Ravens, by extending him early, are giving him an option to take that risk off the table that should be worth something to him. But he's also got a second type of injury risk. And that is, if he misses 4 games due to a transient injury that, you know, he can recover from easily enough, and Corey Bullock goes in and plays well, mm-hmm. then you got a problem, because Corey Bullock is a hell of a lot cheaper and the Ravens need to save money. And, you know, Linderbaum is a one-trick pony in terms of the position he can play. And while Bullock represents a substantial portion of their guard depth for 26, which we'll get to later, is not mm-hmm. a good situation. He is a guy who could be, you know, a significant option at center. They had others. Now I'm not so sure if they have them anymore in terms of who were their options.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. You know, I haven't looked at the draft class. I think the Ravens have shown that they can find interior offensive linemen without using premium draft capital. Linderbaum's really the only one. Linderbaum's the only one since Ben Grubbs, really. I think they're the only two in team history they've taken earlier than the second round, right?
That's right. The only two first rounders are Grubbs and
I don't think they've taken any second rounders. It was the guy from Oklahoma, Casey Raybok. I think he was second runner. Regardless, four. It was a four.
I might be wrong about that, but I thought he was a four. But I could be wrong.
Okay. The point I'm trying to make is that is a position that the Ravens do draft and develop very well, better mm-hmm. than other positions. So again, we're going to come back to Lamar, because it really does all come back to Lamar. But when you're paying a quarterback close to 20% of your cap, and then you have a couple defenders making between 5% and 10% of your cap, at some point you gotta cut your losses somewhere. So I think Linderbaum, unfortunately, might be you know, hope to get a good year out of him this year, and we'll see what happens. But yeah. I don't think it's I think it's less than 50 at this point.
Yeah, I hope if Linderbaum does depart, that obviously I hope it doesn't affect anything about his play this season. I hope he has a great year, gets really paid on the open market at the end of the year. All of those things would only benefit the Ravens and Linderbaum, obviously, if mm-hmm. he has a big year. And I also hope that the relationship's not acrimonious. It'd be nice if Linderbaum comes back for alumni days. I don't think he's ever going to be kind of a Raven of the game player unless they were to win the Super Bowl this year. Like Matt Burke, I don't remember right. if they've ever brought him back for that kind of a thing. And he was every bit as better than Linderbaum, frankly.
Yeah.
In terms of what he did in 4 years with the team.
I think you got to play 5+ years with the team to kind of earn that yeah. honor. And I think that same applies to the Ring of Honor, maybe even 6+ for the Ring of Honor.
Yeah. It's a second contract with the Ring of Honor for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Definitely.
All right. Let's see. Let's move on here. So we talked Travis Jones. I don't think we said what's your percentage on him right now.
I wrote down 70. I think that might be a touch high. Maybe go to 65. I think he fits the mold as a spine of the team, backbone. I think he also is still a little bit under the radar, so he's not record-setting or top-of-the-market money at this point. I do think the fact that they do have Madubuike on the books reduces the chance that they want to pay two defensive tackles a little bit. But looking at the list of five, I do think I would peg it, and it's all speculation, but I would say he has the highest chance to be re-signed out of the five here.
Okay, I would like for that to be the case. I actually have him tied for the second lowest at 40%. Here's my fear. My fear is exactly what you said earlier, is that Travis Jones is already betting on himself for next year. And if he does, that makes this a very high-risk year for him in terms of tens of millions of dollars literally on the line for him between what he might get at the top of the market and what the Ravens might what he'll get if he doesn't have a good year and whether that offer comes from the Ravens or somebody else. But the Ravens do not have good nose tackle depth, and they lost some of it, which we're going to get to in a minute, in a very frustrating way. They still have CJ Okoye on the practice squad as of right now. Of course, he has to survive the season there. And then they have John Jenkins, who presumably is a one-year, one-and-done guy at his age, who would not be back. So the nose tackle will be a position that the Ravens need to get done. Whereas the next one, I think, Adafi Owe is a position the Ravens – know that he will price himself out of Baltimore in all likelihood. The number of guys that have been signed in the prime of their careers for second deals recently, and Hendrickson, I guess, was a third deal. Michael Parsons is a second deal.
He's still unsigned. There's rumors today everybody wants to trade five first-round picks, Ravens first-round picks to get Parsons.
But, five?
I don't know. I'm exaggerating. Yeah. But no, I don't see that one happening. Regardless, so should we move on to OA?
Yeah, OA, I'm at 15%. What do you have?
I'm at 30. Only I think if he has a down year and he wants to come back at a discounted rate. But okay. The Ravens, it seems that they don't pay very many outside linebackers. They paid Suggs, homegrown guy. They paid Dumervil, who was a mercenary. But for the most part, they let Zadarius walk. They let Jadon walk. They let originally they let Pernell McPhee walk. That seems to be a position where they think that the pricing, you don't necessarily get the value on the return, the ROI of these big contracts. And they also have Mike Green, and they just, again, pulled Kyle Van Noy figured out how to put it together with a veteran. And I think they're just going to continue using that model with younger guys and veterans, not first contract guys and fourth contract guys, not second contract, unless they have a really, really special, if Mike Green turns into the next Suggs, maybe they do it. But I think that's sort of their model. They don't want to pay the premium for the second contract.
Yeah, Green is the guy. If they get what they want out of him in 3 years, then I think that he won't be a Suggs. He'll be more like a Dumervil or a really, bendy pass rusher, something they've really not had since McCrary, probably in terms of a really special guy at that position. Another guy they paid was Tyus Bowser, and that really did work out initially. It didn't work out in the end, but he was also not a top of the market pass rusher. He was a specialist Sam linebacker who was very good until the problems started to accumulate. All right, and then the Ravens still have four second tier guys they need to make decisions on, and those are Kohler, and then two specialists, Moore and Stout, the long snapper and the punter, and then Daniel Falele. Would be another guy. And their guard depth is not looking the way it did 3 days ago,
right?
As of right now. So that's quite frustrating, but it is what it is. So Daniel Falele may have more value to the Ravens than he did 3 days ago.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. My personal opinion on this matter is I think through the mid-teens, the Ravens invested too much money in mid-tier players and not enough money in top-of-the-market type of talents. And now they have invested in top-of-the-market type of talents just because they've drafted great players, Lamar and Hamilton, et cetera. So I almost think that the second contract mid-level contracts should be minimized as much as possible. And I think you want to have a team of, great large draft classes of contributors and the true difference makers, the Lamars and the Hamiltons and the Marlows and the likelies potentially, or Travis Jones and Matt Ibike. So I wouldn't be too excited to throw offers at some of these mid-tier level players unless they want to come at a discount. But I don't think giving them a fair market value deal before they've necessarily even proved that they can continue their success from the previous season benefits the team.
You sound like you're talking more about Faulele there than Kohler, because Kohler needs to do some more things as a receiver, probably.
Yeah, I think, you want to have, as you always say, the divisible benefit. Well, what's the benefit for the team if you're paying the guy fair market value when he hasn't proved it over two,
I'm
years?
With you. I'm with you. The question is, how low do you want to go? You know, a guy like Faulele, I would think right now you might be able to get at about $5 million a year, maybe a little bit, maybe even a touch lower than that. And if you could do that for a 4-year deal for $20 million, say, I'd it's a mid-range contract, but it's still cheap for a starting offensive lineman.
Yeah. Five would be fair. Fair. I don't want to go to 7 or 8 when you might, you prove it again. Prove it again before you get 7 or 8.
But this is the risk on the Ravens side. If he does prove it, if he's 95% of the player he was for those last 5 games, or 90%, frankly, that he was for those last 5 games, he's going to clear $8 million easy, and then the Ravens are stuck in that spot. I want them to get value. Believe me, mm-hmm. from Daniel Faulele, I think he is as much their guy as Faulele is. This is a team which he should succeed on. But there are other teams who just want a big guard too,
right?
And you have seen it work for the Ravens, and then maybe it doesn't work for another quarterback as well.
That's what I would say. Buyer beware, because Lamar Jackson elevates offensive linemen for sure.
Yeah. All right. So as we've talked about it, the big deal here is that they really need to sign Lamar Jackson to free up the cap space in 26 to make a lot of these moves. And that will be, it's the most important contract extension, even with, Travis Jones on the line or likely on the line, or whoever you really love in this group. It's Lamar Jackson it's going to make it all possible. And also it's going to, I think, clear up some heartburn for a lot of Ravens fans in terms of the risk of him not being a Raven 3 years from now.
Sure. So, and there's no franchise tag clause in his contract, right? I believe. So yeah, he certainly has a lot of leverage here. I believe he's now the 8th or 9th highest paid quarterback. So in the short period of time since he signed that deal, a lot of less players with lesser ability than him are now being paid more than him. They had an article in the Athletic this morning that the percentage of cap for quarterbacks has risen from about 15% in Tom Brady and Peyton Manning's heyday to about 20% now. So that's another 5% that you have to figure out what you're not going to spend somewhere else in your roster.
Yep. All right. That does require some creativity, of course, but it will also create some cap space that gets pushed out into the future as well. So there'll be some value from that. We need to talk about waiver wire Wednesday now, because honestly, the Ravens did not have a good day on Wednesday. And on Tuesday, they might have set themselves up in part to not have a good day on Wednesday. But Wednesday was an exceptionally bad day. We're going to talk about the practice squad and who they retained. But I think a lot of this is about who they lost and who they got back. The only player they brought in from the outside for their practice squad was Tyler Huntley. And I'm not saying it's a bad addition. I think it was required that they go out and get a quarterback.
Yeah, I think that was a good addition. I think that was, he knows the system. He's friends with Lamar. He can replicate some of Lamar's skill set. I'm happy that they brought Huntley back, but they lost more than they brought, for sure.
Yeah, they lost 6 guys, and we're going to talk about the reason why they lost each of them. But JAD was claimed by 4 teams. A very surprising cut, and you and I have not talked about it since it happened, obviously. But the Titans, being the first team to claim, took 2 of the Ravens that got cut, and they lost 3 in total when there were only 31 claims league-wide. So, it's less than a claim per team, and the Ravens lose 3. It happens when you have an embarrassment of riches on your roster in terms of the depth. But it didn't have to necessarily happen, because the guy that caused them to lose JAD was keeping Rasheen Ali on the roster.
100% agree there. And I hope that this is not something that we look back on at the end of the season and remember that decision in infamy, because, you know, the saying, Ozzie's saying was, you can't have enough corners. It's not, you can't have enough core special teamer split end zone kick returners. You know, there's a thousand of those guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought JAD had a great regular season or preseason. He seemed to finally turn the corner of his development. He has been injured, but he was in line to be the fifth corner behind two extremely injury prone veterans in Alexander and Awuzie. So I know DaCosta said he anguished over that decision. I know Keon Martin, I think he earned a spot.
Yep.
There's no law that says you have to go 25, 25, and 3. And I think that they made a mistake there. And I hope it doesn't cost them, but I just don't see what Rasheen Ali can do that D'Ernest Johnson, who is on the practice squad, can't do, and as well as probably 10 other guys they could find on the street whenever they want them.
Right. I feel the same way about it. Now, I almost feel like in some ways Harbaugh talked about it, and so he felt like he had to go through with it. And
He was setting the stage, and he knew it was going to be an eyebrow raiser, and he wanted to reward his guy for working hard on special teams or whatever. And that's one of the knocks on Harbaugh, in my opinion, is this kind of decision-making sometimes.
Well, he shouldn't have – first of all, this isn't Harbaugh's decision to make. It's DaCosta's, to be clear. But Harbaugh should not have said it in advance, and he probably was campaigning for it. As they were going through, and especially campaigning, I'd be more concerned about this, that Harbaugh is campaigning for a 25-25 split. And I'm okay with a 25-25 split. I would have kept another lineman.
Right.
Not taking Ali. But if you're going to do a 26-24 split, this is the only kind of year you could ever do it, where you have a bajillion talented, you know, young defenders. You're at risk of losing. We're going to go through all that, but this is just, it wasn't handled well in terms of that particular cut, in my opinion. And they had 6 weeks to kick the can down the road had they cut Ali, because first of all, there's only one running back taken in the entire across the league. One of the 31 guys taken was a running back. I forgot his name, but Raheem, or I forget if Raheem is actually his last name or his first name, but I think it's Raheem is his first name, but Raheem Sanders, I believe it is.
Okay.
So
it was mostly defensive backs and linemen were the two.
Yeah. And that's not atypical that you know, cornerbacks are a lot of who gets taken, and inside linebackers are also not that big a risk. So while I'd love the Jay Higgins story, I might've taken a risk on Jay Higgins. And the reason I would have taken a risk on Jay Higgins is he also have Chandler Martin. And so you maybe have a guy you like almost as much that you can keep around. But they had other ways they could have done this. And I did not like the fact that they, you know, we're not able to trade JAD and also just let him go in exchange effectively for Ali.
I mean, if you have four teams that put in a claim, you think that there would one of them towards the back end of the waiver order would say, okay, here's a conditional seventh or some sort of compensation. You know, they spent all this time developing him. He finally developed into something good, and then they just pull the rug out right off of him.
Right. And I do understand the notion that JAD's only got 1 year to play for the Ravens. Mm-hmm. But I also see there's a whole bunch of injury-prone corners in front of him. Mm-hmm. And his chance to play as a number five corner right now on this roster is very high. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to have Keon Martin. He'll probably play too in terms of a guy. I assume TJ Tampa is going to get some initial run this year. And he's had a up and down preseason, I think is the best, most favorable way I can put it. It kind of had, frankly, some difficulty with the speed keeping up. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I'm glad there's one name that I'm really glad the Ravens were able to sneak through, but I'm really upset that they lost JAD.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Let's talk about the rest of the guys because we can't take too long on anybody. So the Titans also claim CJ Ravenel. Now he's a loss. I projected a 10%. I kept my percentages here. I don't remember what yours, but it's probably similar. Yeah. In terms of the probability of him going, that's just really unfortunate because he'd be a good guy to have on the roster as a backup defensive tackle. Bo Braid claimed by two teams, which shocks me. That there was that much interest in Bo Braid, but good for him. I'm glad.
I think he has a skill set that plays in the NFL. The problem with the Ravens is they also have Cole Hamilton, who has that same skill set, but he's 10 times better. Yeah. And I thought that Braid was going to make it because of special teams. So
Bo Braid, I had also a 10% to get cut. And then some of the ones that really pissed me off, because these are guys, they didn't get claimed. They got signed away to practice guides. So these are the Ben Mason lookalikes, if you want to call them that way. And actually, one of them didn't even get signed away yet, but he will. The first is Garrett Dellinger, the 7th-round draft pick. Now, there's a bunch of idiots, frankly, on Twitter that indicate like Dellinger was cut and the Ravens just didn't want him. He wasn't as good as the other. No, that's bullshit. They loved him. They really liked him, and they thought he would stick on the practice squad. They expected him to be back. Jared Penning and Nick Samak are way behind him as choices. In terms of people they would want. And, you know, he's in Cleveland today, presumably signing, but he had to go through a physical and whatnot. But he's the agreement has been made already. We'll never know exactly the reasons why Dellinger chose to look at other options, because I think his situation here is in very good in Baltimore for 25, even better in 26. And I really don't understand why he wouldn't, you know, try and stick it out here. But you can come up with other reasons why that might be true. Might have been something about the coaching. It might have been something about any number of things that he didn't like about what happened here in Baltimore. Might just look at Cleveland and say, this line sucks. I can get a chance in 25 for sure here where I might have to wait.
Maybe he likes the weather in Ohio. I mean, that's a possibility. Dellinger. I thought it was telling that he played behind Dalcourt in pretty much the whole preseason. Maybe he's thinking, well, I got drafted. Give me a.
It was only the last game.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was, and it was a switch. And you know what? That's one of the weird things because nobody's re-signed Dalcourt yet. And hopefully the Ravens, you know, come to their senses and have Dalcourt over Penning. But apparently, you know, Penning is ahead of Dalcourt because they could have Dalcourt right now. They could have him right now.
I don't understand that.
I don't understand it at all.
Struggled tremendously.
Penning looked completely overwhelmed in the last game. But even so, I mean, Dalcourt has a 2-year pedigree with the Ravens, you know, two camp pedigree, and he played well in the last preseason. And he seemed to be a guard center versatile guy last year who might make the end of the roster. And now somehow he's out of a job this year. Doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. I don't follow something. Something's amiss. We don't have knowledge of it, but it's against how they usually operate. It really is.
Yeah, it's a great point. There's something we don't know is the way we've got to say it. But why the hell do you put Dalcourt ahead of Dellinger at right guard in the finale? The only thing I can come up with is they're playing head games with other GMs, and they're trying to show them, hey, our order of entry is such that we like Dalcourt better than Dellinger. You better take Dalcourt, kind of thing.
Right. Don't sign Dellinger. That's what I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if they were, then, you know, it backfired on both ends so far.
Yep.
They lost another guy. And that was Jason Jones. Mm-hmm. Now that's disappointing, but I do understand the Ravens might not have kept two nose tackles, But I thought Jones was every bit the prospect that Okoye is. He might be more. Okoye is a more imposing physical being. Jones is huge, more in shape than he was at Auburn. And I thought, since he's younger and he's playing a little bit better, right, probably at the, his level of play on average is not as bouncy, let's call it, as CJ Okoye's. I was more interested in keeping him.
Disappointed to lose Jones for sure. I thought he was a player, and I thought they could keep two nose tackles on the practice squad, and one of them can line up at three tech for when they're practicing. I mean, it's not the end of the world, and it is notable that he was the only one to sign with a team that's not necessarily a cellar dweller. You know, Cleveland, the Giants, the Titans, they're all expected to be 5-1 teams. The Bucs are expected to contend for their division. I'll keep an eye on his career because he was a player I liked. I liked him coming out. I liked him what I saw. Just unfortunate that you're looking for a nose tackle and then they have two at the same year and they only end up keeping one. So it is what it is.
And you know who did keep two nose tackles on their roster is Tampa Bay. And the other guy they have is Nash Hutmaker, who the Ravens had that weird shell game deal with at the beginning of OTAs where they had signed him to the 90 man in theory, and then it turned out all he had was a tryout. So there might have been, I've heard theories that there may have been a physical that he didn't pass when medical. He got to the building, and then they said, yeah, let's stay anyway. And he's had one of the highest pressure rates of any interior defensive lineman this preseason. So
I saw that.
Drives me up the freaking wall. All right. So while we're happy with the roster, this is the deepest roster the Ravens have ever had. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very happy with it. So don't take it to mean that, but they lost a ton of talent and they didn't have to lose all of this talent in terms of what they did. I don't know what they did to piss off Dellinger, but whatever it was, I mean, that's a shame. And they also could have kept him if they didn't keep Ali and not given Dellinger the option to walk on them.
Right.
Dalcourt, they still could correct their problem because there's no reason he should be behind Penning that I could see, except for whatever we don't know. Mm-hmm. And then the Jason Jones thing, I'm not sure they could have prevented that one, given that
that's just a numbers crunch.
Yeah. All right. So frustrating, but the Ravens got picked over pretty much, and that happens sometimes when you have the biggest cornucopia of talent. Other teams are going to get some of it. So, this is a first world problem. Let's be clear. Okay, the Ravens have a wonderful roster. You know, if you're assigning a number of points from 1 to 100 to it, this is 6 or 7 points. It's not 39, you know, kind of thing in terms of a problem, but it still sucks to lose a lot of players.
I thought they did have some players that we were a little bit concerned were going to get scooped that did make it through. So
yeah.
So from that perspective, let's do that.
Take us through.
Sure. So we already mentioned Tyler Huntley. He's going to serve as a third backup or the third quarterback, obviously. I'm happy about that one. Next one is Jarrett Lichtenhahn, who a player of the size and shape pool that could appeal to some players, needs to get in shape, but I am glad to have him still in the organization. The other two linemen don't have a whole lot of upside, in my opinion, Jared Penning as the guard and Nick Samak, the center.
Yeah, so I'll opine quickly on all of those. Tyler Huntley, we didn't want him as a number two in Baltimore, and I think correctly so. I think they needed to move on and get a quarterback. I think Cooper Rush has done a lot more already this preseason to show that he could maybe manage the Ravens through a couple games. Huntley, you know, did not win for the Ravens when he was put in there for Lamar Jackson. I don't think it's really fair to say he duplicates Lamar's skill set because I don't think he's a threat as a runner really at all. No. So that's a little frustrating, but he knows the system. He can come in, maybe he can play some good scout team ball, and it's a practice squad spot. It's not a roster spot. So the most that will happen is he'll be activated on some game day where the unthinkable happens and Lamar is either hurt or Cooper Rush suffers some injury in practice and can't go. So we won't see more than a series out of Tyler Huntley at some point this year in a blowout game.
Yeah. I think just Rush, I think, helps – has a better arm so he can help develop the young receivers better. And that's why you maybe want a better backup from that perspective.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to go back to Penning and Samak. They would be way down my list of linemen that I'd want the Ravens to keep. And my understanding is, you know, obviously from this signing, they're indicating that Penning and Samak are ahead of Dalcourt. I don't get it. Okay, we've talked about it again. I don't want to beat the hell out of it. Both those guys would have been behind Dellinger in terms of what the hope would be. Samak, a seventh round pick last year. I understand that, you know, he had a decent preseason last year. This year, he really pissed me off. Three straight games, he made basically the same sort of error where he did not have the proper depth on a stunt handoff, and each time it caused a big play. Mm-hmm. In some ways, that's less forgivable than if you make three different errors. Same. Which, yeah. So I didn't like that. But you know, he's a smaller guy. He's not a special athlete. He's not a guy who I believe has any real guard center versatility. Right. So, you know, at 300 pounds, he's a really undersized guard.
Yeah. So out of the three offensive linemen on the practice squad, I think Lichtenhahn has the best potential to maybe show something next year. The other two are just kind of bodies, I consider. So hopefully they don't carry them next, you know, they find better players for next year. Move on to the next grouping, I guess. Fullback Lucas Scott, another player who could have been claimed. I was glad that he returned. D'Ernest Johnson, the running back, I think he provides pretty good depth. He showed some burst in the third preseason game that I wasn't quite sure he had, and he's a hard runner. I think he could probably fare pretty well on kickoff returns if given the opportunity.
Yeah, I think there's two things about him. First of all, he's got three elevations to give. So if you just need a backup kick returner, he's your guy if you don't have the legs otherwise to do it. It basically means if one of Mitchell or Ali is hurt, or Ali is cut and goes elsewhere, you know, you've got three potential elevations for him. It could have been six if Ali was on the practice squad. You'd have had six elevations to use, but not to go any deeper with that. But it also, the nice thing about having Ali on the practice squad, it would have been kicking the can down the road for 6+ weeks, because he doesn't have to be, you don't have to do it every week, but you might. And then you can make a decision then, because somebody else gets hurt, Justice Hill goes down, or even, you know, God forbid Derrick Henry goes down, you still have a pretty good role. And they weren't, I don't think they were going to lose Ali, which is the real issue with that.
100% agree there. 100%. Tight end Zaire Mitchell-Payton. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just had something to say. Very excited to have Lucas Scott back.
Yes.
I think he is a great replacement for Ricard. It could be as early as next year. We've been saying that for the last 5 years. Since Ricard started having the hip problems, we've been talking about the possibility of Ricard being done. And, you know, all of a sudden, what, this is his ninth or tenth season now this year?
I'm looking up his contract as we speak. And he 8 years. So yeah, he's going into his ninth. He's 31, turned 31 in May. And this is a 1 year deal. So I could definitely see the cliff coming, but we'll see. I mean, if he's going to play for vet minimum and play at a Pro Bowl level, you keep him as long as you like, but it's nice to have that backup.
He does get that vet benefit that could money that could be spent elsewhere, like on a Tylan Wallace, say.
Okay, so Zaire Mitchell-Payton was kept at tight end ahead of Scotty Washington. Seems to be a player with a little bit more upside than Washington. The two wide receiver choices were Keith Kirkwood and Anthony Miller. So they are both a little bit more veteran than the other potential practice squad.
You're being very kind to them. They're both in the early stages of using age cream. that's not fair. But these are two guys who are 31 years old, or they will turn 31, and they each have something to add. Kirkwood is a guy who can come in and catch a ball for you every once in a while. In theory, Anthony Miller did catch a ball last year. I think Kirkwood caught five, but Kirkwood also has 11 catches since 2018, I believe, in the NFL. And Miller has one catch in the last three seasons. So they're not guys who have a ton of obvious value. Miller has some kick return value, potentially punt return specifically. I think he's a player you could use on kick returns too. You just got to figure out, you know,
how to block it up.
Yeah, I'll let that happen. So anyway,
Miller produced a little bit in the divisional round game against Buffalo when Flowers was out, and I believe someone else got dinged up, and he actually had a couple of nice plays there. I think he is a player you can plug and play for a little bit of guaranteed, you know what you're getting in the event of multiple cluster injuries there.
Yeah. I'm with you. In terms of what the practice squad was when I was a kid, when you were younger, the practice squad used to be a place where you truly had some players that you were thinking about developing, and you could find a place, maybe a niche use even on their team. And a lot of the guys they had, they maxed out the veterans on this team. And they have a couple other guys that I don't think are gonna work out, which will, you know, maybe four guys fit that category. And I'm down to about six guys or seven guys who are truly developmental hopefuls. And some of them are kind of lottery ticket-ish. And I would put Mitchell Payton in that group, along with like Lichtenhand, are kind of lottery tickets to develop. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Agreed there. You know, because of the elevations, because of the, you know, three elevations, yes, without penalty, they want to keep veterans who they can plug and play. Instead of just saying, well, we're developing you for next year, but we need you to get in there this week. So I understand the logic there. Another player that I think could certainly benefit from some development and does potentially have a lot of untapped upside is Okoye, a player that we thought after the first game, I thought we were thinking maybe he might beat out Jenkins. He did not, but it was good to retain him for sure. He should be a valuable piece on the practice field and in camp next year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is his third year in the NFL. So he's played two full years with the Chargers on the practice squad. And it's also, in theory, only his third year playing football. So he did not go to college, you know, did not play football there. So at the college he didn't go to, that should be fairly obvious. But he's also an IPPP guy. So he gives the Ravens a 17th spot on the practice squad. I'm excited to have him back. I think, you know, you always want to have at least one IPP guy to fill up your
get the benefit of the extra spot. Yeah.
And it should be a developmental guy. Your 17th guy in that spot should be a developmental guy and not a guy who is, you might be counting on for three elevations.
Agreed. The next one is Brent Urban, our old friend. He's on the practice squad. I would expect him to be elevated when necessary, when facing run heavy teams. The game against the Lions in week 3 comes to mind is a game where they might want a 5-tech available. And essentially, they can elevate him and just deactivate one extra player from the active roster. And there you are. You can use him when you need him. So yeah, that's a pretty nice ace up the sleeve there.
It is. It really is a nice ace up the sleeve. And I think that they will have to make a decision on Urban several weeks into the season and get him elevated. But injuries happen. Usually, well, they went that one year where nobody got hurt for the entire season. But Urban, I think, is a good exchange, a swap out for Peebles against a team like the Lions, because Peebles, you know, being more of a penetrating player, is probably going to give you a little less against a team like Detroit. You want them also in games against good teams because you're more likely to not have the 2-touchdown lead late that would allow you to maximize some Peebles value. So
good point.
I like Urban for a lot of this, and effectively I consider Urban a 54th man on the roster in terms of what his status is.
Yes, for sure. Two outside backers, edge rushers, Kamarion Rucker and Malik Ham. I was concerned that Malik Ham might have raised some eyebrows across the league and could potentially be poached. Mm-hmm. Happy to see him there. I thought Rucker did some good things in the preseason as well. So I think that's a pretty good duo of outside linebackers on the practice squad this year.
Yeah, absolutely. They both played well in the fourth quarter of some games, in the second half in general. And I'm happy to have both of them back. Ham was one of the guys I was moderately concerned might be lost, and they slipped him by. He's also a third-year player, so he doesn't have tremendous upside with the Ravens, and that's why I have him in the veteran group, that as I divided out on my sheet here, instead of being one of the guys who is a high upside guy. Now Rucker is a high upside guy, and he was an exciting pass rusher at North Carolina. So he could be a guy who all of a sudden you have an outside linebacker who can rush the passer you didn't really expect to have.
Yeah, it's great organizational depth to when you need them, you elevate them if you do need them. And if not, you hopefully can hold on and bring them into camp next year, see if they can take that next step as Bullock did, the center. Yep.
Well, while we're on the outside linebackers, what do you think they're going to ride with what they have in terms of David Ajabo or make a move before the opener?
It's hard to say. If I had to guess today, I would say they're going to ride with Ojabo. Clowney's the obvious. Za'Darius Smith's potential as well. Mm-hmm. What does Clowney want, and how much playing time do they have for him? I think they want to give Tavius Robinson more reps, that they want to assimilate Mike Green into the rotation. So I'd say probably not, but that could certainly change once they see. It's just at some point they're going to run out of game day jerseys, and Ojabo is pretty much earmarked for inactive. And if you bring Clowney, then who are you now deactivating? Like Green? I don't know who it would be.
Well, they have the option to cut Ojabo is running out of time. At least I think it is. I don't believe they've messed it up by putting him on the 53, but I believe if he plays week one, and I need some clarity on this, because if they cut Ojabo at this point, there's still fairly significant cap savings from doing that.
Million, right?
Yeah. So it's not insignificant. And if you're seriously going to inactivate him, that is too much to pay for a deactivated player. I mean, I don't think he provides you $2 million worth of insurance. And I'm not sure how much I want that, how much I value that insurance over a player like Malik Camp.
Agreed. And if I had my choice, I would have kept Armour Davis over Ojabo. I think the fifth corner is more valuable. Yeah. Fifth, you could probably, anyway, fifth outside backer, fifth corner is more necessary and needed than fifth outside backer for most seasons.
I would agree with that. I didn't really think of it. I am sure they probably made some calls about Ojabo to see if anybody wanted him, because they can't be happy with the deactivation cost of him. So,
right.
All right.
Chandler Martin, inside linebacker, another player that Jay Hummel made it. We should also just touch on Jay Hummel made it, Ruben Lowry made it, and Keon Martin made it. So three undrafted rookies. That's quite the feat for a team with this many draft picks and this steady of a roster. But back to Martin, he did pass through. I think he has some potential, and I think he could help on special teams this season. He could be activated or elevated for special teams this year.
So you did a quick combination of names. There's Jay Higgins and Jake Hummel made the roster, but they both made it. And Jake Hummel was a guy. Yeah, you said Jay Hummel, but that's okay. But it could be that Hummel was a guy that they cut and then they brought him back or whatever. He didn't have a whole lot of guaranteed money, so they could have kept Higgins there instead of Hummel. It would have been another option to create a space, temporarily. Or they could have just made the move. Said Hummel, hey, we're putting you on the practice squad. We want you back, but we can't promise you when we're going to get you back. And just had that play out as it does. If he leaves the team, then you have a younger player at least there who's a 4-year project in terms of Higgins, and at least you would have that value. With Chandler Martin, part of the reason why it wouldn't have been terribly upset or surprised if they cut Higgins was that by having two inside linebackers, there's a good chance they retain one. But we see how well that worked out at guard, and now I'm kind of concerned about how that might have been. I mean, I hate to be as negative as I am about just what happened here, but it was they got purged.
Well, it did work out at D tackle, right? Because we thought they lost Jason Jones, but they kept Okoye, so right. That was sort of we're gonna demote two, and hopefully one will stick. On the topic of inside backers, I did notice that both Christian Welsh and Delshawn Phillips were released from the teams on cutdown day. So not every team values backup core special team inside linebackers as much as the Ravens.
So if you were interested in one of those and you wanted another backup special teamer on your roster, I think the guy you have multiple choices, but you could get rid of De'Ernest Ford, get another R or one running back. Yeah, De'Ernest Ford. I put it here. Yeah, he is De'Ernest Johnson. If they got rid of De'Ernest Johnson, they brought back the inside linebacker, Welch, say, then they'd have him available for special teams, at least for three activations, then for potentially being on the roster if they have some attrition after that. But you can also still get a running back and have it be an R or one, possibly to replace one of the other players on the roster, whether it's a corner or potentially a lineman.
Yeah, we'll see how this takes shape. I mean, this isn't set in stone. There's probably going to be a couple moves here and there. But yeah, anyway, I'm glad they brought Martin back. I think he has some potential, and he's a player I'm glad they kept in the organization. The next player up is a player I know you're happy they kept in the organization, Marquise Robinson, the corner.
Yeah, huge, huge retention for the Ravens there. And I thought there was a pretty good chance he'd be taken. He was one of the real stars of preseason. He's targeted 10 times during the preseason, only 29 yards allowed. Had a really decent number of coverage snaps. It was like 65 or 75 during the preseason. So played well, and certainly could have been a guy. Wasn't as flashy as what Thomas Graham did in that last game, but Marquise Robinson was consistent and outstanding throughout the preseason. I thought he was a guy that the Ravens are very fortunate did not get poached, and I still think he will at some point.
Well, he could potentially see some game action if injuries do strike there, because they're thinner than they were without Armour Davis. And Thomas Graham also made it. He had that nice interception late in the fourth quarter last game. Getting a little older, though. He's not a developmental player, as you know, dear.
Yeah, so Thomas Graham is 26 years old. He's had 5 years in the NFL. He actually didn't play football the year before that. At Oregon, he opted out due to COVID. So his last football that he's played on a full season basis was in 2019 at Oregon. That's a long time ago. There's a lot of people, you know, like Kyle Hamilton or Linderbaum or people like that who were drafted, Matabike, who played a lot of football since then. And he's bounced around between four teams, originally a sixth round pick of the Bears, and then with Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and now Baltimore. I was surprised it was only those four teams. Often a guy like that might have been on seven teams by now, but has some speed, you know, a sub 4.5 40 originally. And so I think they were excited about it.
Yeah, we'll see how he factors in. He'd probably be, somebody else comes available and they're looking to make a move. I could see him being released for a better prospect. But, you know, I remember him coming out too, and he had some ability then, just hasn't quite put it together.
Yeah. One more name on the list, Keandre Jackson.
Yes, sir.
So the safety. Yeah, Keandre Jackson and Igbinosin were true lottery ticket UDFAs. You know, a couple guys coming out of college who hadn't really had great success there in terms of what they'd done. And I think they hoped that either one of them could have developed into a back-end split field guy. Keandre Jackson seemed to show a little bit more there than Igbinosin. And so he was a little bit ahead of him on the order of entry in the final games. I don't think he's a guy the Ravens would be. He certainly is not a guy that threatened at all in Ruben Lowry's position, or Bo Braid's for that matter. But he's a kind of a next man up at safety.
Yeah, I think you need five safeties to practice. Somebody's banged up in the regular season. You don't want to force them to practice. Obviously, that's really his role. I don't see necessarily long term future. Maybe he makes a jump, but you need bodies at certain positions in order to practice. That's why they call it the practice squad.
And he could be a guy they bring up for a game, certainly to play special teams primarily. And he's done a lot of that in camp. So
it's just odd that now that they have this ability to promote players for special teams, and they're still keeping special teams only players on the active 53. That to me is a misstep.
Yeah, they've got some of that, and they've got some like Ajabo, who's outside linebacker only. Mm-hmm. They've got Carson Vinson, who's a developmental lineman. I mean, they do have some roster constraints that are built into who they are this year, but they did some things. I mean, this is a great team. They've got a fantastic chance to go and win the Super Bowl. And yet this was a lot of talent that they lost on waiver wire Wednesday. It was a tough day for them.
It was. So, you know, hopefully they continue with their UDFA scouting prowess and bring in another loaded roster and continue. And as long as they're continuing to restock the deck, then other teams can poach away the ones that don't make the cut, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and it will happen. And honestly, with the guys they had, it might have happened just 4 weeks later if they had retained them. You know, Dellinger, for example. I mean, if he's not going to last forever on a practice squad, he's going to be taken by somebody. So anyway, it may have just been a matter of timing. Voss, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football online, and a brief promo for your restaurant too.
Sure. I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA. Fiamata is the name of our new Italian restaurant and lounge, located at 2900 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg, Maryland. We've been open for about 6 months, and please give us a try and put our cuisine up against anybody.
All right. I've been there a couple of times. I really enjoyed it. Other folks out there, hit me up if you want to be part of the Concerns series. There'll still be an opportunity. I'll record a couple of more this next week. Those will all have to go before the start of the regular season. But I do want to meet some new people and have some new concerns discussed about the Ravens, because that's what we do. We put this great football team under the 40X loop and try and figure out what's wrong with it. And Voss, thanks again for joining me as always.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.